Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
It's time for True American Heroes, For the Record, with Jack Rutland. Another exclusive on Super Talk Mississippi 102.1 FM. Many of our heroes have taken their stories with them to the grave. But this show is about the stories and personal experiences of these veterans. Warning, these stories are real, heartfelt, and unedited.
It's an honor to have with us this morning Ms. Dawn Hemphill, longtime resident of Brookhaven and Lincoln County, who's been very gracious to come in and spend some time with us as we talk about his military experience and his service, most particularly in World War II. Let me just ask some questions, and you just speak to the things out of your experience. But first of all, were you still in school whenever the war started, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, or were you out of school and working?
I was still in high school.
Still in high school.
I finished in 1942, of course, December 41.
December 41 is correct. Now, where were you living at that time?
Bude.
In Bude, Mississippi.
Right.
And where were you going to school?
Bude, Mississippi. Bude High School.
Bude High School. How about that? Do you remember hearing about the bombing of Pearl Harbor?
I heard. Yes, I did. We were out in the yard playing touch football, and the radio was on. Of course, we didn't have television in those days. The radio, the windows were down, and we heard it. And, you know, I thought, we'll whip those guys before breakfast.
Wow. Well, now, tell me about how the decision process was for you to determine what branch of the service you would go into.
Wasn't my decision. I mean, I was at school at Mississippi State, and of course I knew I would be drafted, so I tried to volunteer for every branch of service. You can't make it your eyes, you can't see. Well, so when I was drafted, I thought, I'm not going to worry. They didn't care if you were blind, you know.
So you waited until you got the draft notice.
Right, I sure did.
Interesting. Now, did you have a lot of friends, schoolmates, family members that were enlisting at the same time?
We didn't enlist, remember that?
Excuse me, drafted at the same time.
One boy that I went to high school with was drafted at the same time. We stayed together from then all the time.
And what was his name?
Stuart Beatty.
Stuart Beatty.
And Stuart's not with us anymore.
How about that? So you ended up in the Army.
Right.
All right, tell me about your training before you actually, and you did go overseas, but before all of that, tell me a little bit about your training and where you were and what kind of training you took.
Well, we were training at Taunton, Massachusetts. When we first got up there, we painted every rock in that place. And, of course, amphibious engineers I was assigned to. I can't swim, you know, still can't swim. We took infantry basic, and, well, for about 6 weeks, I don't know how long it was, but that's what I had, infantry basic. And then, of course, you were trained with explosives and building bridges and all that sort of stuff.
Incredible. Now, all your training took place up in Massachusetts.
Right,
then.
Right.
Okay. So, and then you were assigned with what group, what unit?
The 205th Engineers attached to the 29th Division.
Okay. And did you guys get shipped overseas?
We sure did. I think it was March in 43, probably.
And where did they ship you?
It landed in Glasgow, Scotland, and took the train to Avonmouth near Bristol, England. And we stayed there until time to go on the trip to the continent.
Now, it had to be an interesting experience. How old were you probably when you got to England? Roughly.
Oh, 19 to 20.
Now, what was it like for a 19 or a 20-year-old young man from Bude, Mississippi, to suddenly wake up in Scotland, England?
Well, the thing I remember about my first Christmas in England, of course, there weren't many soldiers over there that day. Well, there was many, not as many as lately, but I was on a park bench by myself, first Christmas. Homesick as the devil.
Goodness.
But now
where were you then?
That was in Avonmouth, England.
Avonmouth, England.
Yeah.
Incredible. So, at that point, you were just waiting for orders to be shipped to Europe.
Right. We stayed in England. This was September, I guess, in 44. We stayed there till the invasion.
So when did you actually go into the continent? When did you make that trip across the channel?
June the 6th, 1944.
Oh, my goodness. So you were actually a part of the invasion?
Yeah, but now a good thing, we had been out there in that ocean in the waves, and we were all seasick, you know, and couldn't get on the beach. And it was almost dark when we got on the beach.
Now, I read a good bit about the days leading up to the invasion, and actually most of the troops spent several days on ships because of the weather delays and things. And so how many days do you remember that you actually stayed on that cramped ship with all those other soldiers?
Oh, probably 2 days. Of course, I think the invasion was supposed to be the 5th.
Right.
The weather stopped it. But we didn't get off the ship.
So on December the 6th, early that morning, you started the trip across the channel.
Right, right.
I can only imagine what was going through the minds of a lot of your friends and yourself.
Well, I'll tell you what worried me, you know. I thought, if we get killed, you're supposed to, you know, you could. But I couldn't swim. I didn't want to drown.
And I understand the water was pretty rough on that day anyway.
Yes,
it was rocking pretty good, and you had thoughts. Now, what type of did you actually make a landing in one of the landing craft?
Yes, did now. What do they call those things? Higgins boats. I wasn't
in
a Higgins boat.
You were not in a Higgins.
I was in, I think it was LCI.
Right.
The ramp went down the side of the ship.
Okay.
I believe that's what it was.
A little bit bigger ship, too, isn't it?
Yeah, bigger ship.
Okay, so when did you actually hit the beach on June 6th? Was it earlier in the...
No, it was late at night, almost dark.
Okay, so it was late in the afternoon.
Yeah, right.
Now, which beach do you remember where you were on the beach? Was it Sword, Juneau?
It was Omaha.
Omaha.
Let me tell you something. We went on invasion maneuvers in England for Utah Beach. Utah Beach, all right. We were on a coaster. Coaster's a little British ship that goes along the coast. And all of a sudden, we just pull into Dartmouth, England. Dartmouth, there wasn't a soul on the street. We sit there for hours and hours and hours before we finally got trucks to take us back. Never did join the company, the battalion after that. We were separate. I later found out that was part of Operation Tiger, where the German submarine, German U-boats got out, non-U-boats, torpedo ships, we call them, and sunk several Americans' ships there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they kept that a secret until after the war. Well, now that happened at Stapleton Sands. Dartmouth is north of there. We pulled into Dartmouth, and that's why I later found out we pulled in there.
My goodness.
And, we never did join the company after that, and we drew Omaha Beach. The rest of the company went to Utah Beach.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so you went on to the landed on the beach late in the day on June 6th.
Right, right.
All right, what was it like going on to the beach at that time?
Well, let's just say it wasn't pretty. And I'm not going to say any more about it.
They were still recovering from the initial invasion.
Yeah, now we stayed on that beach. We stayed there for, probably a month. Mm. You took up mines. You made landing strips. You had anything you wanted to blow up, we blew it up.
So tell me a little bit more about your unit. You were actually building things or blowing things up, or both?
Both.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. So you mentioned landing strips. You would put down the metal
mats.
That's right. And you also disarmed mines and things that you found that were left by the Germans.
Right. And made Bailey bridges and I think pontoon bridges. And, we were just general flunkies. I was a section leader, and it says they're supposed to be above average in strength. I was 6 feet tall, weighed 135 pounds.
Well, they apparently thought you were a good leader to put you in that position. All right, so you were on the beach roughly a month.
Yeah.
At the end of that period, you started moving inland.
Right. And we finally wound up in Antwerp, Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved from Belgium to Germany, wound up in Bremerhaven, Germany. And I remember some things. We were lost. It was snow all over the ground, close to Christmas. There were four of us, I guess. I don't remember their names. I remember their faces. One boy spoke French. Anyway, we came to a railroad yard, snow all over the place. And he says, I can smell coal smoke. Well, we knew there was fire someplace. We found a little old room about this size. And it was just loaded with guys just like us. And there was a black soldier sitting on his helmet with a flashlight, reading the Bible and explaining it to the guys sitting around him and asking questions.
My goodness.
Now, we left that. I don't know why we left. We went in. It was snowing. When we got out, it was before daylight. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, full of stars. Snow was all over the place, and it was so quiet you could hear the quietness, you know. Mm. And there was one star in the east that seemed like brighter than all the rest. Now, I don't know if it was Christmas or not, but the story sounds good if it was Christmas, you know.
And it meant something to you at that particular moment.
Yeah, it sure did, I guarantee.
Well, let me ask you this. It sounds like you were right in the middle of the push from the beaches there on Normandy all across Europe and ended up in Germany.
Yeah.
Did you have much contact with the enemy?
Yes, we did. But the things that I remember, let me get this story straight now. We left this place and we wound up in Charleroi, Belgium, trying to get back to the unit. One boy with us spoke French. He said, Don, I got us a room in the house. So we stayed with this family for about 3 or 4 days. And there was one girl, three or four girls. One girl was about 10 years old. She came to see me in Brookhaven here.
Goodness.
Oh, she was in her 60s then, I guess.
How neat.
Yeah.
How neat.
And Sweet P. Adams, Janine Adams, was the translator for us.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. All those years after that experience to be reunited as friends.
When we left the house, the mother gave me her address, and I put it in my scrapbook and forgot about it. Till about in 97 or 98, I found it and put it in a letter and sent it to the burgomaster of Charleroi. And she said he brought it to her house.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
How about that? That is a really neat experience. You know, your actual time as a GI. Now, folks don't realize you guys didn't always get a hot meal.
Oh.
And a lot of times you may not have the right gear. Was that
true
to your experience?
Yeah. That's right. It got so cold the fog even froze, and we didn't have winter clothes.
We're in the studio today with Mr. Don Hemphill, longtime resident of our community, who's sharing his experiences with us from World War II. Mr. Don, you were talking about being in Europe after the Normandy invasion and the push across Europe into Germany. I'm sure you had lots of experiences. Some you may not even wanted to talk about or may not want to remember, but some of the most memorable experiences that just stand out in your mind that you don't think you'll ever forget, any of those that you could share with us?
Well, there's some things that I'll never forget, and I don't even want to talk about.
Sure.
But things that I remember were just things that guys do and happen to each other. I remember when we were going back to, in other words, we were in Bremerhaven, Germany, when the war ended, and to get home, you had to go to the south of France. Well, we were in 40 and 8, that's those cars, you don't have 40 men or 80 horses. And I knew we passed they put wine in tank cars, you know, wooden tank cars. And I knew sometime we were going to pass, stop where one of those cars were. And we did. And those guys got out there with their carbines and shot holes in that thing and took their canteen cups and got that wine. And when we got to, I think it was Le Havre, we were a happy bunch.
Incredible, incredible. What about citations? Did you unit citations,
got
individual?
Got the Corps de Guerre. That's the French citation, but that's all we got. We didn't get anything else. So records got burned, and we wanted to get home, you know.
Where were you? Do you actually remember where you were when you heard that the war was over?
Bremerhaven, Germany.
What was the reaction of the guys around you and yourself?
Oh, gosh, you know. And the German people were happy. Mm. They'd been in war a long time. And, of course, they didn't like us at first. You weren't supposed to fraternize with them. You couldn't speak to them. You're walking down the sidewalk. You didn't get – they moved over for you. Well, you know, you don't do things like that. You know, you see a kid is hungry, you're going to give him something to eat if you got it. And they were hungry people over there. And I guess
it had to be an emotional experience for all of the guys when y'all heard that it was finally over, because you didn't get leave to go home.
Oh, no, indeed.
That's what I was thinking.
I can remember when I came home, I got in Boston and called home. And my dad says, "What do you want for supper?" And it just came out, grits and gravy. And I hadn't thought about grits and gravy in years, because I knew she'd have mom would have that ham, and I could put my feet on her table and be happy.
Wow. You know? Wow. So you came back by ship.
Oh, yeah.
That had to be an experience. A bunch of happy guys compared to the trip over with a bunch of guys that were really uncertain about what was coming. But coming back had to be a little different.
Yeah, well, we went over on the USS Explorer, which was a converted cargo ship, you know. And it wasn't a pleasant trip. It took us 11 days. In the worst storm they had in the North Atlantic in years. And then we came back on the USS General Anderson, a troop ship, an American troop ship. Different thing altogether.
Everybody was feeling a lot better.
Oh, everybody was feeling a lot better.
So you landed in Boston?
Well, yeah, we landed in Boston, but the weather was so good we were ahead of time, see. And the captain wanted to take us by New York so we could see the Statue of Liberty.
Okay.
And I don't know, this is not a nice thing to tell you, but we were all out on the deck seeing the Statue of Liberty. This friend of mine who wanted to get back to some raw Mississippian mare, the girl he'd been riding to all these years, turned around, bent over, and said, "Sweetheart, take a good look, or you're never going to see it again."
So you left the ship, how long did it take you? I'm sure by train was the way you came back to the South.
Oh, I'm going to say a week, because you stayed in camp up there for a while to get deprocessed. And
That's right.
Then you got back to Camp Shelby.
And Shelby.
And, of course, my mom and dad were there.
At Shelby,
waiting for me.
Quite a reunion, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Well, Mr. Hemphill, I can't tell you what an honor it is to have had you with us this morning, and I would love to spend hours with you hearing your experiences. But I do thank you for taking the time to share these experiences with us. And I can honestly say on behalf of Brookhaven, Lincoln County, and a grateful country as well, that we thank you for your service at a time when our country needed men such as yourself.
Well, let me tell you two more things that I remember. A deck of cards when I got on the ship going overseas, and a half a pint of milk when I got off the ship coming home.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Again, thank you, Mr. Hemphill.
Oh, it's quite been my pleasure.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.